Welcome to Love Amped, an exploration of healing others through healing ourselves. Check out loveamped.com for additional resources and support.
Love Amped. Hello, friends, and welcome back to Love Amped. I'm your host, Seth Pearson, and this week we're talking with the Sarah Rapoport. That's right, the Rapoport herself, a naturopath student and psychiatrist in training at the Bastyr University. She is amazingly knowledgeable on psychology, on the body, and all aspects of holistic approach to medicine. She's so awesome. You're gonna love this. Enjoy.
Sarah! What the heck? What? Okay, well, no one expected this. Did they? Were they expecting this?
I don't see why or why not.
Okay, excellent answer. Excellent answer.
Do you expect any of the people that were on your show to be on your show?
No.
Okay.
I never knew. It's always a surprise.
I love that I called it a show, too, and not a podcast. Yeah, I feel like I'm an old person that just dated myself. Uh-huh. I'm like, oh, yeah, your show.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, we're learning more about how you view podcasts now. Sarah, that's the main part.
I'm like, where's the video part?
So why the heck are you on this podcast?
I you're the one that asked me,
uh-huh.
So you maybe should answer that question.
What were we talking about, though?
I was honestly trying to think about that earlier today, and I was like, we had a really great conversation, but what did we talk about?
Oh, we talked about everything, Sarah.
We did.
We got right down and dirty into it.
We did. We got deep.
And I think really what started it off is, Sarah, what brought you into naturopath psychiatry?
Psychiatry. Man, so many things. Oh, and the cat's joined us.
Yeah, Fuzzman immediately jumps in, as he does.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like just within the past few months, I've really embraced calling myself somebody that's interested in psychiatry. I think before I was like, yeah, it's kind of like neurology and kind of a few other things, and now I'm like, oh no, it's psychiatry, and that's really what I feel like I can call myself as a naturopathic psychiatrist once I graduate and get my degree.
Yeah.
So many things. I think if we want to start way back when, where everything starts with all each and every one of us, my brother has this like really rare metabolic disorder. And my parents didn't know what it was for a really long time. And a bunch of the neurologists at the time were like, oh, it's autism, as just this like random blanket diagnosis.
Yeah.
And we didn't really figure out what was going on with him until he was 16. So then he got diagnosed with this rare metabolic disorder, and it was this whole journey of interest of me being really invested in like what's going on with him and like how to explain this. And so I've always been really interested in human beings and how they work, and he especially as a young kid really interested me because I was like, wow, your mind works so differently than mine does, and your whole worldview is different, and how do I interact with that and how do I access that? And I think there was this deep wanting to really relate to him and understand him, and I think that love was born from this like young age. And so that's kind of what started the whole thing. But I think over kind of the course of my life, now that I'm 30 years old, it's all these different events have kind of brought me to the place where I'm like, oh, like, it's really this whole mind-body connection that interests me. And this is like how I want to interface with people. And this is what I believe is the root of all health, is how we interact with ourselves, how we interact with our environment.
Nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations on taking that path and like knowing that that's what you want. Like that's how you want to heal, be a part of the healing of this world.
Yes.
And when did you find that you had to love yourself?
Oh, I feel like there's been multiple times in my life where that's popped up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first time, or like the first time I had that awareness or that realization, I left where I was living in Columbus. I was just like, I am done with this town. I need something different. I need to put my hands in the dirt and feel reality and feel grounded and feel connected to something bigger than myself. So I went to live on a farm in Israel.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
Forever the fuck away.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to curse, right?
Yes, absolutely.
It just came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I moved out there, and I was just, before that, I was just so, I was dealing with so much unhappiness, and I didn't really know how to process it all. I was just like, something is wrong, and I remember getting there, and I had been so depressed and unhappy for so long at, like, this sort of baseline level, and I remember sitting the first night that I was on that farm and watching the sunset, and just, like, tears coming down my face. Because I was like, oh my God, like I'm connected with beauty again. And I've forgotten what that was like. And then this realization came through to myself that was just like, oh, like I can be anywhere in the world. And like the only person that I have is myself. And so I have to love myself because there's no one else that's going to do it for me. And if I'm the only person that I'm with all the time, you know, wherever you go, yeah. there you are.
Yeah.
I have to forge that relationship with myself. And then, so I did that. And I think there's times in your life, I don't know if this has been your experience, where you're like, I thought I loved myself, and then...
yeah, when these things happen, and you're like, wait, what the heck? I thought I had it.
Yeah.
I thought I had it. You have these moments where you kind of slip back into old habits.
Yeah, and so... I think, and I also think that's, like, this challenge that we manifest in this life, where it's like, the universe is like, oh, you thought you loved yourself, but let me prove to you that you can love yourself so much more.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you know, lots of, like, interpersonal relationships and things like that have kind of, especially, like, some rough stuff that happened recently, have kind of got me to the point where it was like, yo, like, I don't think I loved myself very much in those moments, and I think I lost sight of what that meant, and it opened up this whole new world of, like, what loving myself could actually look like and how deep that could go, and, yeah, I don't think I necessarily would have gotten to that point if I hadn't really, like, dug deep within myself.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, you also needed those other, like, types of relationships to bring them up.
Right.
It's like you almost need that, or like myself included, need that ebb and flow of like relationships of like you kind of get close and then like you move away and then like you learn and grow on your own, learn and grow with others, learn and grow on your own, learn and grow with the others.
Right. I think there's a lot within that that really transforms our experience of like how we're interacting with people, who we're interacting with. And, like, I kind of was thinking about this the other day, but throughout my life, I'm kind of looking at, like, oh, who was I befriending? Who was I dating? And I feel like I'm at this point now where I'm like, whoa, like, my friend group is, like, so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm like, wow, like, this is, like, the pinnacle of existence right now. It's, like, I just have so many amazing people in my life that are, like, amazing resources to me, and there's so much, like, good back and forth within those relationships, and I'm like, wow, I'm just, like, ascending up some sort of pole where I'm like, cool, like, all those things in my life that weren't serving me, like, bye,
and
like, inviting all this amazingness in, and I kind of forgot what your original question was there, but that was just, like...
That's the whole point, usually, is that someone talks until they forget, they have to know, oh, like, what were we talking about? Like, that's my favorite, but that's some of my favorite moments. And so, like, what's a an example that comes to mind of, like, those, like, I don't know, interpersonal, like, examples of relationships where you're like, oh, am I loving myself by, like, being in this?
Yeah. I think, like, disclaimer on, like, I think a lot about, like, how we talk about other people.
Yeah.
And, like, how important that is to, like, really make sure that, like, what I'm saying is, like, cool, this was my experience. And, like, to not feel like I'm you know, talking badly about somebody else. Right, and yeah. So it's kind there's, of like, I'm
coming
just gonna,
from a place of love and respect, of course, but also your, there's going to be moments of expressing, like, maybe emotions that come off, like, maybe not as negative or as respectful as you are trying to
and
make
And so it's
them.
Like, I'll explain this with, like, total generalization so that this person doesn't feel outed.
Yeah.
Because it's
for
like,
sure.
Yeah.
Good on you. Good on you. I think everyone is going to be on board with you, Sarah.
Yeah. And because it's like people will know who I'm talking about. And so it's like you can ask me one-on-one about that, other human beings out there. But for the purposes of this, it's just like what aspect of that was the learning experience for me and like what aspect of that kind of like leads to my truth. And so I'll speak to that. And so, yeah, like the last romantic relationship that I was in, to me, I would say there were like elements of emotional abuse, and yeah, there was a lot of difficulty there, difficulty in communication, and I think, you know, ultimately is like a lot of stuff happened in which I think we kind of do this thing where we're like, oh, like I'm in this thing and like I'm not really necessarily allowing myself to be present to the potential harm that is occurring here to myself. And I think that's what was kind of happening, where I was like, oh, like there's so much that I'm involved in here that I can't really see the light for myself. And so I was in this place with it where it was kind of, we were kind of on and off for a while. And it like did not feel good in my body. And so what was kind of happening was like, you know, I would feel these feelings in my body and be like, well, you know, like it's just kind of a crazy situation and that's just how it feels. And like, you know, and part of me was also like, that's maybe relationships, like they're hard and it doesn't feel good all the time. And so there's like this element of justifying certain things that maybe really aren't justifiable, that really just aren't okay. And there was this discomfort or maybe this not knowing of like, is it okay to say that that's not okay? Is it, do I have the ability to identify what's not okay about this? And I kept kind of going in and out of it and being like, something doesn't feel right, something. But then I'd be like, oh, it feels right again. And something doesn't feel right. And oh, it feels right again. And I now recognize that pattern as being like a very not okay pattern. But in the moment, it was just like I was in it, you know?
Yeah.
And like that's kind of how we live life sometimes. It's just like I'm in it. And so an interesting thing happened where it was like when I finally like allowed myself to really separate from it, I went on this vacation by myself and I really like sat down with myself. I like started to unravel these things in my body a little bit where I was like, oh, that's not okay. And that's not okay. And what do I need? And what feels good to me? And it was like, all these answers were kind of coming out of me. And then I was like, okay, what do I want to do with this? And like, what does it actually mean? And are there potential different solutions to this? And it felt like this is like one of a few times in my life this has happened. This awakening started happening where it was like, oh, like I was awakening to a deeper sense of my own reality. And so I started to process it, but I kind of was like, okay, like let's see how it goes with this person. And I became an so that heightened sense of awareness that I started getting, it started becoming more of my conscious being. And so the more that I like held that and was aware with that and was present with that, the more that I was like, hey, that's not right. And that's not right. And that doesn't feel right. And I was still kind of ignoring it and being like, okay, that's not right, but I addressed it. So it's okay now. And then the interesting thing happened where it was like, I ended up back in Seattle. And immediately when I got back here, I was like, something really isn't okay. Like, something in my body is not okay. And I remember this feeling that I've had before at different times in my life, in which, like, I felt like I wanted to grab my skin and pull it off and escape my body.
Wow.
And, like, whenever I have that feeling, I'm like, something has to change, because my belief is that, like, the more that we're trying to escape ourselves, the more that we're not okay with our own reality. And the only person that's making our own reality is ourselves. And so it's my choice, you know? And it's like, cool, like, I'm going to look back and be like, I put myself here, and it doesn't feel okay anymore, so I need to find a way out. And I think in my mind, and I think in a lot of people's minds, it's like, oh, the way out is, like, I have to, like, remove myself physically somehow. And, like, this is, you know, FYI, like, some suicidality talk, just to, like, warn people that are listening to this. But that's, like, something that I think about with, like, cutting is, like, oh, like, the sense of, like, wanting to leave the body. And I think it's, like, a really intelligent response. It's like, oh, something doesn't feel right, and, like, this feels like some sort of escape. And I started, and that's, like, the feeling that I had was, like, oh, like, if I can just make a hole in my body and my body can leave through the hole, everything's gonna be fine. Wow. So it gives me a lot of compassion for understanding what that experience is like, because it's just, like, and, like, not to say that I know, just as a disclaimer, but I think about that a lot of, like, oh, like, how do we try to leave our bodies on a daily basis? And in ways that are less extreme than that as well. And so, yeah, I had that feeling, and then I was like, okay, I have to stop. Like, it needs to end. And there was, like, a lot of pain and suffering through that. And, but ultimately it was like, oh, my body told me the answer. And it's funny, because as somebody that's been interested in mind-body medicine, like, the irony of it all.
Oh, yeah.
As somebody that was interested in mind-body medicine before that, that really opened the door to be like, hey, you're not practicing what you preach here if you're not listening to your body. And, you know, trying to also hold that judgment of myself and, like, oh, that's just a thing that I noticed. Like, hey, you're not practicing what you preach, rather than being like, you're bad. You didn't practice what you preach. But I realized that that's the move that I needed to make to do my work in the world, because my work is, like, saying, hey, that thing that you feel in your body is, like, the most valid thing in this world.
It's I think that's another thing that we talked about, is trusting people. It seems like some have lost trust in their own, what their body tells them.
Right.
They, like, they don't believe it.
Right.
And do you think that it is because of, like, we get stuck in our heads of trying to logically make things, to logically come through, like, make out, like, this puzzle?
Totally. And I think a lot of the reason why that is because we were raised in this whole Cartesian dualism system. So for people that maybe are like, what is that? René Descartes, the famous philosopher, was a fan of this whole dualistic mind-body thing, which was basically saying the mind and the body are two separate entities. And he famously said, I think, therefore I am. So that kind of is where a lot of the systems of this country are based. It's like, we really value thought a lot. I mean, think of, like, you'll be, like, wandering around and be like, oh, that person went to Harvard. And everyone's like, oh my God, they went to Harvard.
Yes.
And then you maybe meet that person and you're like, really? Like, and, you know, like, there's maybe, like, 9 different versions of intelligence, I think. So it's, like, of course, like, that person's smart in one way, unless, you know, they got in because their parents got them in, and that's a whole another discussion. But it's, like, we respond to different types of intelligence, and there are so many different types of intelligence. And, you know, sometimes you see that person and you're like, wow, they're so book smart, but, like, the way that they're carrying themselves in the world is, like, completely, like, insane to me.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, from my perspective, maybe. And, like, yeah, but it's, we very much value the thought processes of the mind, and we don't even think about what the body's contribution is. And I think, you know, a lot of people have kind of theorized that that's based on oppressive systems as well, where a lot of, you know, ancient tribes, native people, really trust the gut. And, like, you hear the phrase, trust the gut. And that has a lot of intelligence in it, because think about, like, kind of when you're in a dangerous situation and suddenly, like, the hairs prick up on the back of your neck and you're like, something's wrong here. And you really feel it kind of, like, in your stomach, in the pit of your stomach. And that's, like, your body telling you, like, you should be scared. But the more that we move away from understanding that the body can give us that information, the less we are in tune with that fear response. And so if you're some dictator out there in some country somewhere, you don't want people to be in touch with that.
Right.
Because then they're going to overthrow you. So the more that you use this Cartesian-based dualism system, the more that everybody's oppressed.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that's true in a way of this country as well. And I'm not a master in understanding oppressive systems or capitalism or anything. So there's probably somebody that you can interview that understands that a little bit better than
I do. We'll find them. Hey, anyone out there, let us know. Like, apply now.
Totally. But it's a thing. And, you know, the more that we get in touch with that, the more that we realize that there's so many things in this world that are just not right. Mm-hmm.
Wow. And so, with your, like, kind of recent example of, like, oh, right, again, duh, listen to your body, like, how do you think you'll constantly keep yourself in that state of, like, relentless, like, self-connection?
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot, too, because I think sometimes we're really connected, and then sometimes, like, there's something in our mind that's like, move away from that. Like, this thing's interesting. And I think so much of that comes down to, like, building mindfulness and building awareness. Because the more that I'm aware, the more that I can see my mind doing that. And I can kind of reel it in and be like, hey, I see what you're doing there, mind. Like, does that actually serve us in our greater purpose? Can I sit with that and see if that actually feels good in my body, or am I just doing it to do it?
Ooh, nice.
And, you know, I talk to my clients about, like, what does that practice look like of mindfulness? And I think meditation and mindfulness are so closely related, where meditation is kind of the practice of sitting and developing awareness. So it's like, okay, I sit down for 20 minutes twice a day, if I'm lucky. which maybe about half the time I am. And I really just sit there and I observe everything happening, like non-judgmental observation. Just like, nice. Oh, hey, that thought happened. And like, sometimes obviously the judgment comes up because that's what our mind does. And so that's the whole mindfulness aspect, is like, we accept that our mind does that thing where we want to judge and we want to like attach onto our thoughts. But the mindfulness aspect is bringing ourselves back. To being like, oh, okay, it's just a thought. It's just passing through. And setting that intention to be like, hey, like, these are all just things, and I'm not them, and they're not me.
Nice. Yeah, not attaching yourself to that.
Right.
And then, like, and recognize that those are thoughts and not feelings.
Right.
That's always a good one.
Right.
What are some examples of, like, your, I guess you could say, like, tapes in your head that are negative that you find, like, what are the repeating ones?
I think there's always an unworthiness story. And I think we were talking about that now that I remember.
Oh yeah.
There's always that's like, oh, you can't do that. And then, like, when I really get down to it though, it's like, what is that? And I think beyond the, you can't do that, is fear. It's like, oh, Brené Brown talks about this, like, oh, if I do that, I'm making myself vulnerable. And she talks about how when that video of her talking about vulnerability was released, she just, like, freaked out because she was like, people are going to comment on it and they're going to say mean things about me. Because, like, that's what happens when you put yourself out there in such a big way.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, you're opening yourself up to criticism, especially if you're releasing something like that on such a big scale. And so I think that there's, like, that's the base fear there. There's something that's like, oh, I'm going to say something wrong. I'm going to do something wrong. And then really it's like, what is wrong and what's right? You know, like, the beauty in, you know, being quote unquote wrong is that you get to learn something from it. So, like, when I really break it down, I'm just like, there's nothing really to feel that way about, but it's still, I think we still have to honor that as being part of our stories because, and, like, I really believe in narrative medicine. It's like, we've told ourselves stories about ourselves for our whole lives, and it's our job as adults to deconstruct that.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, is that true or is that not true? But also honor the fact that, like, yeah, I believed that for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And how would you, if you could dive more into narrative therapy, how would you say you've been able to flip some of those narratives around?
Yeah. So that's kind of like one example where I'm like, cool, let's deconstruct unworthiness. I think something that comes up for me a lot is like relational feelings of security and like permanence and impermanence. And let me think, I'm like, I want to think of a good example of this.
and feel free to take your time. There's no rush.
Yeah. This like really lovely person came into my life like very briefly recently for like a moment. And then it was like, we had this like really great night. And then he's like, oh, I have to move to a different city. And whoa. I was like, yeah, like, you do need to do that. That's really important. And then it's, like, all these feelings come up. It's, like, oh, like, this could have been really amazing and interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's just, like, and, like, I've learned from, you know, I like to listen to a lot of Pema Chodron.
What is that?
She's this amazing Buddhist nun.
Okay.
And she writes some really great books. One of them is When Things Fall Apart, and I think it's just such a fantastic book.
Awesome.
But she has this whole spiel on impermanence and how it's so hard for us to deal with impermanence, but it's just a facet of life.
Yeah.
And so something about that really struck me in the book. And she has this thing about like, oh, when you have that thought come up, just label it as impermanence. Like, just label what these things are. And so I've kind of had to like constantly just go through my mind and being like, oh, like, you're kind of like having that thought, but that's just impermanence. And suddenly it's like the attachment that I have to it kind of dissipates where I'm like, oh yeah, like it would have been cool to like form some sort of friendship or relationship with this person, but that's like not in the cards right now. And that's just me dealing with the impermanence of that.
Yeah.
And also like on the other side of that too, it's like, you know, what is so hard about impermanence. Sometimes things are just impermanent, and like, can we celebrate that also?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's like a really hard practice because it's like, I can say that sitting here now, but it's like in the moment sometimes it's really difficult.
Oh yeah. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's just, it's like our lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always take it to the small, to the large scale.
Yes. Yes. And so there's, like, there's a lot of things like that where, and I feel like now that I'm looking back kind of on my past however so many years, it's interesting the things that I've deconstructed. So it's, like, this need to like, overachieve all the time, that's one that I'm, like, I think I successfully have deconstructed a large chunk of that.
Yeah.
Not the whole thing, because it's like, I still want to be good at things, and I still want to do a good job. Because, like, who doesn't, you know? But at the same time, it's like, now when I get, like, a 70-something or an 80-something on a test that I, like, didn't really study for that much, I'm like, yeah, you deserve that. Like, or, like, maybe that was too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I used to be, like, that kid that was like, if I don't get in the 90s, everything's over.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so you kind of had that perfectionist mindset.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
And I think, like, if you would have asked me, I would have been like, I'm not that much of a perfectionist, but I think there was something I was internalizing about it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's still something that I contend with, where it's like I kind of fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And towing the line kind of between doing a good job and, like, really holding myself accountable in a positive way versus being a perfectionist and, like, holding myself to a standard that doesn't need to exist is, like, difficult.
Yeah. And you talk about just internalizing. That was another thing that we talked about. And, like, how do you view internalizing and how it shows up?
Oh, man. There's so many different ways that that shows up. And, like, I think maybe it's best explained, like, from personal example, when I was a kid, I was, like, internalizing all my anger. Mm. Like, if I was upset about something and, like, you know, I think this is maybe helpful for people as, like, this instructional dynamic here, but, like, you know, my family was kind of chaotic, like, dealing with my brother's metabolic disease and kind of, like, my parents kind of looking after that and, like, trying to manage this whole... My dad's working all the time, and my mom's working part-time, and, like, I'm there, just, like, hanging out.
Yeah, with their hands up like this, what up?
And it's, okay. Like, it's, you know, it's a challenging dynamic, and as a kid, I was like, I can't have any problems because my brother's the one with the problems. Mm. So anytime I had a problem, I was like, all right, stuff it down somewhere inside of you, because ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah.
And that ended up being really damaging to me. And, like, you know, as a kid, also, like, really, you know, intelligent mechanism there to be like, oh, like, of course you did that. You were just trying to, like, protect everyone and keep everyone safe. And, like, that's really thoughtful. And also, maybe not the best idea.
Hey, kiddo.
Right. And it's just like, but when you're a kid, you don't have the intelligence or the foresight to kind of know that. So it's like, of course, I talk to my child self about that. And I'm like, girl, like, you were doing a good job. Like, that was really smart of you. And, like, now you can let it go. But so I would be angry about stuff and I would, like, really bottle it inside and I just wouldn't express myself. And so that caught up with me later.
Yeah.
And it continues to catch up with me because I don't think we're ever totally free of some of our conditioning. It's like it's always kind of there with us. But I've spent a lot of time, especially recently, deconstructing that a lot and trying to bring more awareness to when I'm trying to not express myself for the comfort of someone else.
Ooh, okay. Okay. And in those moments, how does that feel?
Like, the part where I'm trying to not express myself.
Yeah.
So I've been doing a lot more embodiment practice, and there's a lot of, like, differing definitions of what embodiment is, and there's a lot of debate in that. I can kind of explain, like, what it means to me is that I try to just contact the natural intelligence of my body. So just, like, sitting quietly with myself and being like, all right, how does that feel? Where do I feel it? A friend and I got trained in, like, the first level of focusing technique, which is a technique to, do you know what focusing technique is?
Ooh, you're the second person to mention this.
Yeah.
And it sounded freaking awesome.
It's amazing.
Oh, shit. Okay, guys, we're gonna just, whoever's listening, like, hold me accountable. I'm, like, signing up for this, like, real soon.
Yeah, there's a book, too. The guy that invented it wrote a book, and that's, like, a great, like, segue into it, I think. But it's great, because it's, like, a lot of the techniques that I think I'm interested in now, I'm like, oh, it's so simple, but it's deep at the same time.
Yes, yes. And it's, like, if it was so, in a way, like, simple, everyone would already be doing this, like, and there would be a lot less problems or something like that. Yeah,
yeah. And, like, honestly, what focusing technique is, I'm like, how is this not just how we're raised? Like, we should just be,
oh,
like,
yeah, every single
checking
time,
in all the time.
All the, like, a lot of the things, like, in my last 2 years that I've, like, done it to, like, work on myself and stuff, I was like, why didn't I, oh, when I was, like, 8, tell me about this. Like,
yeah. So.
Yes.
Yeah, focusing technique. You sit with yourself, and a lot of it is just about noticing, where it's like, all right, like, maybe you have a prompt that's guiding you towards where you want to go. Maybe you're just sitting with your body, and you're seeing where is the tension. And the cool thing that I like about focusing technique is that you start labeling things in your body, and you don't say, like, oh, I am angry. You say, something inside of me is angry, or something here, and you point to a spot in your body, like, something here feels angry. And I think, like, the more that I've gotten into studying a lot of this, like, mind-body therapeutic stuff, the more that I've realized how valuable that is. It's the same thing as what we're doing kind of with mindfulness meditation, is, like, I'm not my thoughts. They're just this thing inside of me that's happening. And so focusing is kind of like the somatic, embodied way to be like, there's something inside of me that's doing this, but it's not me. I don't have to be angry in my whole body. Like, there's just a part of me that's angry, and I'm something else. And it really diffuses what you're feeling. And then within focusing technique, you generally sit for like a period of 20 minutes, and you just see what happens when you address what's happening. You're like, okay, like, I'm feeling this thing in my abdomen. It feels like, you know, some number of descriptive words. And then I just kind of see where it goes, and maybe some thoughts come up and I express those thoughts. Maybe some sort of other sensation comes up. I express that. And then you sit with the partner, and the partner will just reflect things back to you that you've said. And sometimes the partner has maybe like a little bit more of a role than that, but they're just there to reflect back to you. And sometimes that can just be like a really healing experience, is to be like, I feel tension in my chest. And the partner says, yeah, you feel tension in your chest. And you're like, oh, like, you get me.
Yeah. Wow, that's some great empathy work.
Right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, yeah. Right? Yeah, but I believe it. You feel it.
Yeah, and I'm now like, why are we talking about focusing?
It but sounds, yeah, like you're focusing. No, yeah. I was just saying.
Wow. Okay. And so, and obviously delves much, much deeper amongst that. Like, you probably feel a much deeper relationship with yourself through having gone through that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also feel like I'm also just at the beginning of a lot of these embodied experiences, mm-hmm. where it's like, maybe I'm not at the very beginning, but like, yeah. there's so much more in that world that I feel like I have to learn. Mm-hmm. And I listen to a lot of people kind of talking about different embodiment techniques and teachers, and I'm like, wow, like, there is only so much, like, there's this huge distance that I can go, and I'm really excited about that. But I also am like, I'm just at the beginning, and like, even talking yeah. about it now, I'm like, do you know, it's like the unworthiness story mm-hmm. comes up, where it's like, cool, I can address that now. It's like, yeah, like, do I have the right to be talking about this? And it's like, wow. but of course, yeah. like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, like, everybody, I think, is approaching in this life consciousness, and we're all at different yeah. levels of that. I don't mm-hmm. think there's any human out there that's not in some way approaching a certain level of consciousness. And so we're all at different points in that spectrum. Like, we should all be able to talk about them from whatever point we're at.
Yeah.
And, like, there's always going to be people that are like, oh, I had that experience once too, and I'm all yeah. the way here. And then some yeah. people that are like, whoa, I have no idea what that even remotely yeah. is like at all.
Yeah.
So the range of human experience is really cool to me.
Mm-hmm. It's really great. And it's like, yeah, it's Sarah. It sounds like there's also, like, little definitely varying levels of, like, I'd be like, on this podcast, like, I used to, like, now I've been on a few other podcasts now, and there's still like this little voice in my head. It was like, they're going to be asking me about these certain things. And like, there are people that are totally more knowledgeable and like can articulate these things in better ways. But it's like, but this is like, no, you like, you have a certain level of experience that is absolutely like, worthy. Of yeah. being shared.
So do you.
Like, thanks. Thanks. Yeah. And how do you, seeing all that, relating to, say, for instance, Rolfing, Soma, structural
yeah.
integration?
Yeah.
As I have just finished my seventh session
Yay!
Of it.
So fun.
And there are so many things that come up with, like, whoa, emotions trapped in the body that sure. have been there for a long time coming out. What's your experience with that?
Yeah. That's like, I love that stuff. It, I think, is this really awesome window into kind of what we're talking about when we talk about the innate intelligence of the body and how emotions are just energy in motion. And that actually comes from the Latin emotere, energy in motion.
Sweet.
And the way that we experience emotions are as these physical sensations in the body. Like, feelings are more like what meaning we're ascribing to that, but emotions are really like, oh, this thing that I felt. And then we kind of decide, like, oh, that's anxiety.
Mm.
But a lot of those things, especially, you know, like, if we're talking about kind of internalizing stuff, really just get trapped in the body. And I think body work is one of those really cool ways to be able to, like, physically unleash some of that. And there's different ways that we can access that, right? Where it's like focusing is also another way through more of like kind of this energetic thing of like, oh, I'm getting to this point in my body and it needs some sort of unwinding.
Yeah.
But also with like hands-on work, it's like, oh, this other person is here with presence to you, which is this aspect of social engagement that we really need to heal. Like, we heal best in safety, and having another person tend to you is like, for most people, not for everyone, but for people without like a certain level of trauma, is kind of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But really having somebody attend to you and like, kind of like be able to like kind of touch your wounds is like such a healing experience. And so sometimes we don't even know where things are trapped inside of us, especially like we have a lot of stuff in this diaphragmatic area. Sometimes it's like somebody contacts something there and you're like, whoa, where did that come from? And it's these emotions that kind of get trapped in the body that we maybe didn't cortically process.
Yeah.
Or maybe we partially did, but something still got stuck there. It's something that's still really hard to understand because it's such a strange thing.
It is. It is. Like, you just said the word cortically process.
Yeah.
Like, what... Like, what is that?
So
break that down.
If we're talking about emotions kind of as this, like, physical experience, so I could say, if I wanted to be kind of reductionistic about that, that's a sensory experience. And so when we experience something through the sensory perspective, it goes up to our thalamus, which is this center in our brains that processes sensory information. It's kind of like this gateway that's like, I'm going to send it here and I'm going to send it here. So it goes up into our brains through the thalamus. And the thalamus is like, cool, I need to send it places now. And one of the places it sends that information is to the prefrontal cortex. And that's the part of our brain that is responsible for assigning meaning to things. Mm. And so generally, like, what we're looking for in kind of like this healthy response, like, I'm not, you know, I don't want to say like we should do this, we shouldn't do that, but kind of the way that naturally emotions are processed is like we feel something, it kind of goes through that whole route, and then in our brain we're like, okay, it was that, and like this makes sense because of that. Sometimes what happens in trauma is that it never makes it to the cortex and it just goes into the centers of our brain that deal with fear, the amygdala. And that also has a connection with long-term memory. And so there's a lot of complications that kind of happen within that. But that also kind of results in us storing things in the body. Mm. So until we're really able to discharge in a way, which is also kind of like a complicated process, then the potential for it being stuck in our body is still there. And I don't want that to feel fearful to anyone, because I think that's just part of what happens in life, is sometimes things just get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no big deal. But maybe what I want to do as, like, an educator and a doctor is give people the tools to know how to discharge.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe this is kind of getting off topic from your original question, but, like...
Not at all.
But, like, one thing of, like, when we experience something traumatic, which is, you know, big trauma or little trauma, I'm not trying to distinguish between those things, is that we can kind of shake it off. And that's what animals do in the wild is, let's say, example, we have some wildebeest, some sweet little wildebeest out there, and suddenly a lion happens upon this wildebeest, and the wildebeest is like, oh my god, there's a lion here, I need to get going, I need to run. So the wildebeest sympathetic nervous system comes into activation, and that's the fight or flight mode. Mm-hmm. So the wildebeest starts running. At some point, the wildebeest, you know, is awesome and outruns this lion, or, you know, like, gets into some sort of patch where the lion can't get to. And then the sympathetic nervous system turns off, and the wildebeest just kind of, like, collapses for a second. all systems offline. The way that the wildebeest knows how to process that information after that is to completely shake it off. And you see animals doing this. This is from Peter Levine. He's this somatic experiencing guru. He actually invented somatic experiencing, but he wrote a book about this called Waking the Tiger, where it's like, you see animals in the wild doing this. Something traumatic happens to them and they have to shake it off. And so we see animals doing this in the wild. They're doing the thing, they shake it off, and they're fine. They're like, cool, like, that ended, I'm good, like, on to the next thing. They're not kind of constantly traumatized. And it actually works, it's different for people, but that's maybe partially because we don't know how to shake it off.
Mm.
Or we were never taught how to shake it off. It does come naturally, I think, to some people, but because it's not in the intrinsic fabric of our society, like, we really don't have any connection with that response. And so part of, you know, like, what I tell people sometimes is, like, hey, if something really scary happens to you, like, go in a room by yourself for 10 minutes and just shake.
Mm-hmm.
And, like normalize that, too. Like, totally normal. This is what animals mm-hmm. do in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, like, the way, this is all polyvagal theory, which is, like, a whole other aspect of something that I'm very into. But, cool. like, how I kind of explain a lot of this stuff is that we have different responses according to our physiology in terms of our vagus nerve and our sympathetic nervous system. So that represents, the vagus being the representation of the parasympathetic nervous system. So, like, our whole nervous system, in terms of the peripheral part, this is me explaining this, because yeah. I'm like, oh, go I just threw it. Out all these terms.
Go for it,
like,
yes,
you know what I'm
you.
Talking about.
Yes.
So we have the central nervous system, and we have the peripheral nervous system. So Ooh. The central nervous system is our brain and our spinal cord, so we're just going to put that over here.
Yeah.
The peripheral nervous system is the somatic nervous system, which is like our skeletal muscles and everything, so that's going to be the inputs from what we feel from the world and the outputs kind of from our central nervous system that are for the rest of our body. What I'm talking about is the autonomic nervous system, which is another facet of the peripheral nervous system. An autonomic nervous system is the responses that are not voluntary, everything that's involuntary. So mm-hmm. that's going to include the sympathetic, the fight or flight, the parasympathetic, the rest and digest, and the enteric nervous system, which is like our gut nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, where was I going with that? So a lot of how we relate to the world and how our nervous systems exist in the world are related to our autonomic nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's related to a lot of the conditioning that we've had in life. So it's like our past experiences, how we perceive the world, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. So that's like the field of which I work in with people, where we're just working with people's nervous systems.
Yeah.
And that, I'm, like, trying to relate that back. I'm like, ah, that was useful for something that I was awesome. Saying before. Yeah, we're talking about the vagus nerve, and we're talking about, oh, okay. So we're talking about this animal in the wild. And so all of this kind of relates back to sympathetic and parasympathetic responses, because when the animal has to run from the lion, the wildebeest, they have to mobilize, so they have to become sympathetic. Like, all right, like, all the blood has to go to the essential organs,
yeah.
and, like, I'm readying my body to be able to, like, move as fast as I fucking can. The parasympathetic nervous system, the vagus nerve, has two aspects to it. There's the dorsal vagus nerve and the ventral vagus nerve. The dorsal vagus nerve exists to make us basically play dead.
Hmm.
So you see this sometimes in animals, where it's just, like, they're frozen. You've probably seen, like, YouTube videos of, like fainting goats.
Yeah,
like,
fainting goats. That response. That is what came to mind.
Yeah, yeah. Where it's like, why is this animal just, like, dropping dead right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's that. Mm-hmm. And then the ventral vagus is the interesting thing. Only mammals have it. And it is all about engaging with others. It's all about social engagement. So what is the thing that the animal does when a traumatic thing happens to them? The animal goes and hangs out with their friends and is like, hey, let me tell you about what just happened to me. And like, humans naturally do this where it's like, oh, something really shitty happened to me. Like, I'm going to call my friend because I just like need them there to be like, hey, let's talk about this. And so like, that's kind of the whole picture of our nervous system. It's like, we have three different options for how we orient. We have the mobilize, we have the play dead, which is immobilization, and we have the engagement. And so in the story of the animal, the reason why shaking is effective is because the way that we came into something is the way that we have to go back out of it. So if the animal is sympathetic and then they shake it off, and then they're like, all right, I'm calm now. What the animal did was the animal went back into the sympathetic activation. I'm kind of explaining this a little bit backwards, but basically, when we're immobilized, I'll like not use the animal right now. When we're immobilized, when we can't move, the only way to get out of it is to move, which seems kind of like obvious and not obvious at the same time. And like, I think most people maybe listening to this, maybe you yourself experience this thing where it's like, sometimes you're just like, oh my God, I'm so stuck. And your body's stuck and your mind's stuck. And ironically, it's like, the hardest thing to do is move, but the thing that helps you get out of it is movement. And shaking is like a really great way to do that. And it's really hard, as you might imagine, to socially engage when you're immobilized. And so it's like you really can't get to social engagement until you've gone through that sympathetic route. And the sympathetic route is the shaking. And so it's interesting that it's like we kind of have to go through being sympathetic again to be able to engage with others.
Yeah. It's like, unless someone knows, like, I haven't heard from this person for a few days. I need to go see them. Oh my gosh, there they are. They're stuck in their bed again.
Right.
Get up. And you shake them physically. Right.
And sometimes you have to do that.
Yeah.
Because, and it's like, you know, with different levels of depression and kind of like what we're going through as human beings, it's like sometimes it's really hard to just get up and do the shaking. It's really hard. And like, you know, as easy as it is to say, like, sitting here being like, yeah, I shake all the time. Like, when I'm in those moments, it's really, really hard. And so, like, I think it's really important to, like, have compassion for yourself. To be like, hey, I know what, like, we all do this. Like, I know what's good for me and I'm not doing it. And you see yourself doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it happens.
And when you, and kind of, for someone that's, like, never shook, like, while sitting, how would you describe, like, how would you give them the 101, like, over a podcast?
Yeah.
Because, like, I know exactly what you're talking about. I do it all the time. And it's like, we're a part of the movement community here. Yeah, like, we're all about that. And, like, doing it wherever you are standing where it looks ridiculous to someone else. Yes. So, yeah. Go ahead.
Yes. It's kind of hard to explain this without seeing a visual, but I'm going to try my best. So what you do is you just stand up, and it's exactly what you think it is. This is funny. It's like, that's Andy good. Do the Hokey Pokey. I like to tell people the first time to close their eyes because I think we have this narrative of how we might be looking. And that's like an interesting narrative in its own. It's like, oh yeah, like that is interesting. Just to really bring this, like, in Gaga dancing, sometimes they call it an earthquake, and, like, that may refer to a different kind of shaking, but I still like that imagery, and maybe that's, like, a little too soon after the 4.6 earthquake that we just experienced.
Too soon, Sarah, this is a bad omen. I'm just embracing myself. I'm in the doorway right
like
now.
Not a good, like, Seattle thing to talk about. But yeah, it's like you bring this earthquake-like shake into your body, and you can really shake your body out as much as you want. Like, you can be in your room by yourself and nobody's watching you. So, like, shake your limbs however you want to. And I generally tell people to just try to stay in the same spot, because then it kind of turns into the more of like, oh, we're doing this dance, which is also great.
Yes.
but kind of making sure that there's like enough momentum in the body in one position that you're kind of like really activating that sympathetic response. Because sometimes if we get too into the dancing, it's like, oh, we're doing some slow moves and then we're doing some fast moves. And it's like really just kind of like a constant cadence to like shake to.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's so hard to explain.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It's interesting. Like,
I don't think I've ever tried to explain it, but that was pretty awesome.
I've thought about this from time to time of like, it's like, how do you explain embodiment to somebody on the internet?
Yep.
Or like, it's like all these challenges of like, how do you explain something that is very much an experience of like, you are here in your body and I'm trying to relate it to people that aren't there. And I'm like, I don't know if it's truly possible. Mm-hmm. I don't. Like, I think we can get an idea and like that can lead us to some sort of, I don't know, greater appreciation or knowledge. But I think like being embodied with other people is medicinal. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, find a shaker in your community and ask them how they do it and maybe get a demonstration.
A fellow shaker.
Yeah, and then maybe like you made a friend and that's great. Yeah. And then you're engaging that ventral vagal system.
All right.
Yeah, we always bring it back to the ventral vagus.
I'm always going to be bringing it back to the ventral vagus from now on. Yeah. I'll be like, so where are we not ventral vagus right now? Like,
how could I be more ventral vagus?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's gonna be my first bumper sticker, actually, I think.
If you make some, I would love. I'll just hand them out to all my patients.
BB, ventral vagus. What up? Like, you flash up the V's like it's like a game symbol or something. Oh
but
my
like,
gosh.
Really, here's like this thing that I'm passionate about with all of this is like, we don't know about our nervous systems. Like, I know this because I study this, but like, pretty much everyone out there, aside from the people that are studying it, are not aware that like, these are all just responses of their nervous system. And I think that if we, as a society, understood that better, we would have so much more compassion. Because it's like, some people get really mobilized, they get really into their sympathetic nervous system, and they're just angry and yelling all the time. And you see this a lot in traffic, where like, I see this every day, where it's like, people are having fights in their cars.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, through the windows.
Holy crap.
And like, but now, because I like, study this stuff, I'm just like, oh, they're getting mobilized.
Yeah.
Like, okay, they just, you know, like, this is from their conditioning, and like, you know, something happened and like, they're just in a moment right now and they're not really consciously processing this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and kind of sometimes you, and I watch people a lot cause I'm just like a lover of human studying.
Yep.
But like sometimes you see people in their car afterwards and it's almost like this thing glosses over them of like, oh, like that just happened. Or like, how do I process that? Or how do I deal with that?
Yeah.
And it's just interesting to watch because I'm like, yeah, like this thing just kind of came over you and you didn't know what happened. So, yeah, and I think like the more that I look into this and the more that I kind of try to help people understand human behavior through this and try to help understand myself and the other people that I know through this, it's just like, wow, like we're all just human. And we're all just a collection of these past experiences and how we relate to the world and how that is kind of different for everyone and kind of the same for everyone at the same time. And like, yeah, it's just like, how do we hold compassion for that? And how do we also like hold ourselves accountable in different ways once we know that?
Hmm. Nice. How do you hold yourself accountable?
I think like, so the more we know about ourselves and our responses and our nervous system, the more that we can kind of help other people in our lives, like, access that information and, like, treat us kinder and then treat them kinder. And so kind of like the way that I'm thinking about this is, like, how we communicate with other people. And something that my therapist said to me that I was like, oh, that's just brilliant, is she's like, tell people about how you are in the world. And she's like, you're a really big giver. Like, maybe you should just be upfront with people, like, when you meet them and say, like, hey, like, I'm really giving. How do you feel about that? Like, how do you receive that? And I'm like, oh.
What? What? Sarah, holy shit. Oh man, that's a big one. Okay, that's setting me off right now. Inside, that's so cool.
Right?
That's what? Can you say that one more time just to really nail it?
Yeah. And okay. So what my therapist said to me, she said, like, you know, you're a very giving person. And like, have you ever told anyone that before? Have you ever just been up front? And she's just like, what would it look like if you said, like, hey, I'm really giving, like, how are you with receiving that? Because here's the thing. Some people are not comfortable with receiving love. Mm-hmm. And, like, I will credit myself as, like, being one of those people. Mm-hmm. And part of my awareness practice is that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then it opens this really interesting conversation where it's like, oh, I can say that to somebody else. And they can be like, wow, that's interesting. Like, either I'm a giver, too, or... oh, like, it's hard for me to receive, or, like, so many different responses come out of that.
Yeah.
But it's also, like, when that, and she kind of said this to me in, like, some different words, but it's, like, when you set the expectation of who you are in some ways at the beginning with someone, or, like, kind of, like, your awareness of yourself, then that person can actually address that instead of it being this nice. Unspoken thing. Because yeah. I think what happens a lot in relationships, whether that's, you know, intimate partnership or friendship or something, it's like all this stuff kind of goes unsaid and people just kind of assume that the other person's going to take this role on or take that role on.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's really like saying these things explicitly. And part of that might be just that it feels really unnatural and kind of dorky to be like, I'm a giver. Who are you?
Yeah. Shake my hand. Do we agree? Yes. Okay.
Right. But it's also just like, I think like this next level of like relating is to really just be like, hey, this is who I am. And like, let's, and that's really vulnerable too, is like, I'm really giving, or I'm really, like, think about things that we have, like, a worse association with, like, I'm really pushy.
Yeah.
Like, I like things to be done on time. It's like, when you say things like that, you kind of open yourself up to rejection, and I think that's why we're so fearful in our lives of talking about things like that, because we're like, oh, like, if I am needy, then this person's not gonna want me anymore. But the problem is that if you, everybody has needs, number one.
Yeah.
So we're all needy. We can just dispel that right now. No one is needy. Everyone is needy.
Yeah.
Kind of a no one and everyone is at the same time.
Yeah.
But if you already know that, like, there are specific needs or, like, a set of needs that you have and you're not expressing them, like, you're not going to get them met.
Right.
And I learned that the hard way in so many ways. It's like, oh, actually, like, you just have to be comfortably uncomfortable with expressing some of these things. Because the people that want to do that for you and want to receive you are going to show up for you. And the people that don't, then you already know at the beginning that they're not there to show up for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so better to learn that lesson now than learn it later in terms of just having that expectation that's never going to get met.
Yeah. And, I've definitely found for myself as like whenever people express those needs to me is always like, thank you. Like, thank you for like letting me know. Like, cause you want to help like meet those needs for others.
Totally. And that's been so much of a practice for me recently. Cause I was, you know, I expressed kind of this story at the beginning of, like, being a kid and not being comfortable with having needs because my brother was the one that had needs. And so this is, like, a very recent thing for me of, like, oh, I need to, like, stand in my truth, and my truth is that I have needs.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, fundamentally just admitting that.
Yes.
Being like, oh,
Sarah's got needs.
I got needs.
She's got needs.
And then being like, cool, like, when I feel something come up that maybe doesn't feel good or feels like I have to express it, like, just doing it, and, like, there's so much vulnerability in that, and fear, and it's, like, every time that I've done it recently, I've been, like, there's, like, this aspect of me that's, like, brace yourself, but it's literally only been good so far.
Yeah.
Like, it's only been received well.
Uh-huh.
And so, that's but, sick. Like, that's so beautiful, like, when we relate it back to the nervous system, because it's, like, I'm teaching myself a new pattern now, and I'm teaching
new
myself
responses.
This, the pattern that it's okay to have needs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, so cool that we can do that to ourselves. And, like, you know, it's obviously something that, like, maybe will take the entire rest of my life. Maybe I'll always have this, like, tiny right. little discomfort with
right.
it. But the fact is that, like, my behavior's changed, and that's, like, really all we can look at.
Wow. Very empowering.
Yes!
Very empowering! Sarah, where did disempowered thoughts and actions come into play in your life?
Ooh, that's a good one. So much. Like, I've given my power away a lot throughout my life. I think I got into a lot of, like, romantic partnerships unconsciously as kind of this way to, like, and, like, this is no fault of the other person. It's just, like, that person maybe had, like, a certain degree of, like, here's my place in the world, and, like, I own it. And it was like, oh, I can just hop on that train.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cool, like, I can just ride that train, and, like, I know where I'm at in the world, too.
Mm.
And then yeah. I realized that that's actually really disempowering. And I know, yeah. like, shocking.
Right, right.
to mind blown.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole thing is, like, the only way to come into a relationship where somebody really knows exactly what their place is in the world and what they're trying to create in the world is and stuff like that is to also be coming from that place. And so that's how I disempower myself, is, like, I wasn't standing in my truth, and I wasn't being like, these things are, you know, this is where I'm at in the world, and this is my thing. I was just kind of absorbing myself into somebody else's world, and that's, yeah. you know, like, codependency.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and it's like, of course I did that, because that's what I learned how to do from my childhood. So it's like, mm. I can bring a lot of compassion to that. I'm not like, oh, darn you, you're codependent. It's like,
yeah,
yeah, I'm a codependent in recovery.
yeah.
It's like AA. And, like, there are codependency groups there that are groups. Like AA.
Yep.
CODA. They're called CODA for anyone out there that's there interested. if you're like me, a recovering codependent. But, yeah, it's a really interesting thing to gain empowerment after so much of that. Because it kind of, I had to kind of define what empowerment meant for me. Where it's like, what does it mean to stand inside my truth? What is my truth? And especially growing up, kind of the way that I did, it was like, I was codependent to survive, and I didn't have the resources to be like, what is me? And so now it's like age 30, you know, like, I'm really, like, diving into, like, what is me and what feels like me. And I didn't have the tools to do that before, and I think the reason that I have the tools to do that now is through embodiment, is because it's like I can ask myself what feels good to me and what feels genuine to me, and I know when I've done something that doesn't feel good or genuine to me, because I identify the feeling afterward of like, oh, that maybe wasn't the right thing to do,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine, but I think it's kind of like being able to kind of know that, being like, oh, that wasn't the right thing, and come back. Or like, oh, that was the right thing, gold star.
Yeah.
Because it's like you're kind of pendulating yourself in that way to be like, oh, like, I'm setting the bar or the meter for, like, how I can exist united in myself in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm still learning how to do that. And so it's kind of like I have to figure it out a little bit, which is, of course, like, growing pains city.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But also, like, awesome. And because that's, like, because I trust myself now and I trust my body, like, everything begins with yourself. And if you don't trust yourself, like, you end up in compromising positions in this life.
Yeah.
And part of that, you know, I wasn't trusting myself. And now in, like, embodiment practice and really connecting with that gut feeling, I learned how to trust myself. And I learned that, like, the body knows what's best. And because I function on that fundamental belief, I'm like, cool, like, I feel so much more grounded than I've ever felt in my whole life before.
Nice. That's awesome.
And I'll tell you this really interesting story is when I was living in Israel, and I've come back to this moment so many times.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because it seemed kind of ridiculous and innocuous at the time, but I'm in this mall, and there's this mall in Tel Aviv that's like like, the architect that designed this mall was just, like, clearly on LSD or something when he was making it. And there's, like, all these crazy stairways, and, like, a lot of the building doesn't make sense. Like, you're like, oh, if I just walk left, I'll get there. And then you end up on, like, the fourth floor, and you're like, but I was supposed to go to the left side of the first floor. And, like, that's just how this building is organized. So I'm, like, stuck in this labyrinth of a building, and I'm just wandering around, and I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm probably going to the health food store on the fourth floor. But there's this shop there, and this shop is full of all sorts of, like, witchy things and, like, gems and trinkets, and, like, I just feel compelled to go into the shop. So I go in, and I'm, like, talking to the owner, and he's like, oh, do you want me to read your cards? And he has a tarot deck. And I was like, sure. And so it's just, you know, the kind of reading where you just pick one card, and I pick this card, and it's this tree. And he's explaining the meaning of it to me, and he's like, you know, you float around all over the place, but you never feel like you put roots down anywhere. And I was like, oh! Whoa. And it was like, and of course it stuck with me, because it's like, there was like this really deep truth about it. And I'm like, yeah, that's really true. And the crazy thing was, like, a week's previous, I'm getting this tattoo of a tree, and yeah. This tattoo, I'm here showing it to you right here now, yeah. Has no roots. And I did not even process that. I was like, this is the tree that I want. And, like, it's this whole story of, like, me finally getting the tattoo artist that I want.
Oh.
And fighting about people about the tree, because they didn't want to do this tree. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's just hilarious, because it's like, the tree has no roots. And I get this reading, and, like, I know, I'm like, I've never felt grounded, and I've always just felt like I'm floating around everywhere, and I traveled kind of all over the world at this point, like, you know, for fun, but also because it's like, I'm looking for this feeling, and, like, the feeling was ground. And, you know, maybe ever since forever, it's like, I'm like, where is that feeling, and where can I find it? And it's like, I think we try to find that feeling in places and people and all over the place. But the thing that I had to learn is that the feeling is actually in myself that I needed to contact. And I just had no idea how to contact that. And I think we don't have any idea how to contact that, because it's such a strangely, like, esoteric idea of, like, it's within you. And, like, you sometimes hear this a lot in, like, spiritual teachings, where it's like, everything is within you. And you're like, that's kind of hokey, but it's also kind of true.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
And the thing is, like, you can hear that 1,000 times. You can hear people being like, it's within you. And you're like, yeah, 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 I get it. But until I got it in an embodied way, like, I did not get it. So I was that person that was like, yeah, totally, it is within me. Like, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But until I actually felt it being within me and being like, oh, like, I feel different.
Yeah.
Then that was the moment that I was like, oh, something has totally changed in my physiology. And the weird thing is, it's like, I can talk about it, and I'm still like, I don't know if whoever's listening, like, understands, or if, like, you know, like, what level of understanding, because I don't even know what level of understanding I'm at in
yeah.
it. But it's just fascinating.
If anything, something to, like, even just these words to grab onto, that right. if they feel it or start to see it and it starts happening, they're like, wait, okay, yeah, this, like, more of this. This right. is what I like. When this right. shows up, let's really dive into
totally.
It.
Totally.
Like, within myself. And would you say, like, moving into empowerment and mm-hmm. lose, like, going less in the disempowerment route, where has your victim started to dissolve after that part?
Like, victim mentality?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we all struggle with, like, that level of victim mentality where it's like, we're like, why is this happening to me? And really great friend told me, she was like, why is it not happening to me? Like, why not? And I was like, what? Like, oh my God. It's interesting, like, how much my mindset has changed around that, where it's like, I'm like, do I even relate to victim mentality anymore? Whoa, like, I'm trying to figure that out.
Nice. That's a pretty great spot to be in.
Yeah. And, like, I'm really trying to dig deep here and being like, do I relate to that in some ways? And I think sometimes our first response is kind of being like, why is that happening to me? Or why did this person do that to me? Mm-hmm. But the reality is, like, I'm the creator of my own reality. And I put myself in a lot of these situations, and, like, obviously, like, there are situations in this life with which, like, we don't necessarily have full control, and, like, I'm speaking a lot about, like, different traumatic-based things, mm-hmm. which is kind of, like, a different story, but, like, for the purposes of kind of, like, what I'm saying here is, like, yeah, it's, like, we can hold people accountable, and maybe kind of bringing that piece back in a little bit, because I do want to address that. We can hold people accountable for, like, not treating us kindly or not treating the world kindly. Like, we still need to do that. We can't just, like, spiritually bypass everything. Where it's nice. Like, oh, they're just in their path there. And I've made this mistake before where it's like, oh, they're just there and they just, you know, they're on their journey or whatever you want to say about it.
Yeah.
It's like, no, people need to be held accountable. People need to be told, like, hey, that wasn't okay. And we also still have to, like, within that, be like, what was my part? What was their part? What was the situation? Like, what is everyone's part in all of this? And own the fact that, like, in a lot of ways, we are the own creators of our reality. Yeah. And we do, and I firmly believe that we, like, manifest, you know, both, we manifest what we're sending out. So if I'm spending a lot of time being fearful, or, like, a lot of mental capacity being like, oh, I'm really scared of this thing happening, it's gonna happen. Like, it's just gonna manifest.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, that kind of ties into this whole, like, victimization thing, because it's like, if I believe that I'm the victim, everything in my life, like, that's my reference point. So I'll just believe that I'm the victim in everything, where it's like, oh, of course that would happen to me. That always happens to me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, sometimes I will still catch myself in that dialogue, and then I'm like, but, like, the whole thing there is, and, like, you know, really distinguishing this from a spiritual bypass is, like, yeah, that thing happened to you again. Like, what part did you have in that?
Nice.
Like, did you invite that in? And, like, to really kind of be this person that's, like, poking myself and being like, what are you inviting in, you know? And, like, did you invite that in, or is that just something that entered coincidentally? Mm-hmm. And, like, mm-hmm. kind of being able to distinguish these things.
Because mm-hmm. sometimes they are truly just, like, did you invite it in, or is, like, was it just, like, random? It's like, did a car crash happen to you?
Right.
Like, that can
truly,
happen.
Truly.
And it's not like, like, you're like, today I'm inviting car crashes. Like,
right. Because, like, yeah. Because, like, I'm like, we're not inviting in deep trauma.
Yeah.
Like, we're not.
Yeah, for sure.
But, like, aspects of, like, in terms of, like, who we're interacting with, sometimes we are inviting certain energies in. And we have to be really careful of that. And also, it's just, like, and that's also, like, the piece of empowerment and awareness is, like, am I aware of these things? And through awareness, can I gain empowerment to be like, oh, I'm choosing differently this time? And part of my practice is now, like, so many of the things that we choose are subconscious and, like, we are just not aware of. And part of our practice, I think, in, like, kind of gaining more awareness is to bring the subconscious into the conscious.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's like, so I'm trying to do more of those things, but it's interesting because the antidote to, like, what you were doing before is to kind of do the opposite. So it's kind of this funny thing where I'm like, where I, like, have to tell myself to do the opposite thing, and it's so unnatural and so hilarious that it's like, and, like, a simple version of this is, like, a no practice, where it's like, oh, I would always say yes, and now it's like I say no to, like, things that, like, I probably shouldn't be, or not, like, shouldn't, whatever, yeah. but, like, there's probably no reason for me to say no to, but yep. I'm like, you actually have to just choose no now.
Yeah.
Nice. And so it's just funny, because I'm just like, no.
just no.
And, like, in other ways, it's also just, like, it's funny to choose the opposite of, like, you know, and like it also gets complicated because it's like, oh, I want to choose joy. And sometimes I have to just be like, well, you don't get to have joy today because because choosing joy has led you down this road.
Yeah.
But there's a balance there, right? Where it's like, I'm not just being like, you must suffer. It's just like, no, like, just like look at the grand scheme of things and like when you're choosing different things and like make a different choice this time.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Treating yourself as kind of like this project of like, that might be curious. Let me try that and see how that unfolds.
For sure. So, interesting. Yeah. So if, say, what would your be your advice to someone that has found themselves in a situation that they feel like through like victim mentality, like say that they have invited in, and that how would they lead to empowerment through that?
Yeah. I think something that's just really helpful. Oh, meow.
Thanks, Buzz.
Is just kind of changing the frame of reference. So I think creating awareness surrounding victim mentality is really important to be like, okay, here I am and I'm saying this thing always happens to me. So is that true? So you create awareness around that. And I think the first question is that I like to ask is like, is that true? And really just being curious about like, hey, like, I think this thing is happening to me. Is that true? What leads me to believe that's true? And then the next question is like, okay, like, am I creating this somehow? And like, what evidence can I pile on to me creating this somehow? And like, without judgment, it's just like, oh, maybe I invited that in, and I invited that in. And, you know, using kind of, like, this curiosity mindset to really be like, all right, what's the truth of this actual situation? And am I really a victim? Because sometimes it's like, there are things in this life in which, like, we are a victim. Yeah. Like, somebody robs us, we are a victim.
Yes.
But it's also, like, how do I relate to that? Mm. Where, you know, some people are out there getting robbed and being like, that person probably really needed the money.
Yeah, I think I'm at the point where I'm like, I mean, I've been burglarized before. And, yeah. And sometimes, and I, how I, like, approach, like, seeing those situations now are like, well, now I know what it's like to get burglarized and, like, the process. And, like, I know, like, things I can do in the future to avoid this. And, like,
you kind of...
Like, you can always say you got that experience. That's kind of what I go to.
Right. And it's like, that's kind of beautiful. It's like the way that you're choosing to orient to that experience is not necessarily in the victim role.
Right.
And, like, I do want to mention, too, that, like, that gets dicey. Yeah. Like, there is so much injustice in this world. And, like, it's just, it is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't want this conversation to kind of be, like, you know, kind of like condoning that or being like spiritual bypassing out of that. Because yep. I think there's like a lot of danger.
I love that I'm going to use that spiritual bypass. That's genius. This is so true. It's so true.
Yeah. And I mean, like in the spiritual community, I think we kind of enter that territory a lot. And like, and this is kind of like a segue, but it's like even through meditation practices, it's like you can spiritual bypass through meditation, you can spiritual bypass through deep spiritual practice. And like that's where it gets kind of complicated and difficult. So, yeah, I think we just we kind of have to just bring it back to like what's true for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think embodiment practice can really help with that. Rather than just being like, well, this is what I want to be true. You know, like I believe that this is the reality and that there's a God watching over us and blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's fine if you really deeply are believing that. But like sometimes people are just kind of entering this realm of like, I want to believe this because I don't want to deal with the reality.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yep. Oh, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Getting out of religion at a young age. You gotta ask those questions to yourself. It's the only way to get out.
It's the only way.
Yeah. Feels great to be out of that. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. And Sarah, what else would you say to someone that's having a hard time loving themselves?
Yeah. It's interesting because my friend Jane and I kind of talk about this concept a lot of like, did we really understand any of this or like self-love in general without going to this like total place of darkness? And some people will call this like a dark night of the soul. Wow. And I've had two of them now, which is not a lot. I think like two big ones. Mm-hmm. I think like people can experience many of them throughout their lifetimes, and it always kind of leads to this state of greater awareness or like, you know, maybe like something towards the pathway of enlightenment, however far that might be, or, yeah, you know, completely unreachable. But like, there's this question there where it's like, do you really have to like go to the depths of despair to realize that you're doing something wrong? And I don't think that's true, but I also feel like it's really hard for me to like try to understand that without having that experience. And so I think something really, like, if I'm kind of just taking that experience out and like, maybe I want to put it in also and just be like, hey, it's okay to experience some really hard shit, because if you listen to it and if you really dive deep into it, you can really learn a lot, and it can be this really beautiful gateway into self-love. So we'll put that there to be like, hey, hard stuff, you're really important. Yeah. And we'll just like box that up and put it right here. And the other thing I think that I want to mention is like, I follow a lot of really like great therapists and counselors on Instagram, because it's like my field.
It's so cool that they're on there. They're like, check it out, this page.
This is like, there have been so many stories recently written about people that are like doing kind of like with these little therapeutic nuggets on Instagram. And like, I think all these people have been very careful to be like, this is not therapy. It does not serve the role of therapy, but these nuggets are like so awesome. And I think like for me, it's been like, oh my God, like this like rock of like, I needed somebody else to say this and they said it. And like, I really like, I've never felt so attached to the internet before as I have with these internet therapists.
Where I'm this just is like, awesome.
Where I'm like, you guys, yeah, I'll give you some people, but they're like saying these things that are just like amazing and like really like justifying and just like awesome. But anyway, one of them, which I'm like forgetting who it was, and I like definitely want to credit this person, but we'll just like credit them out there as a blanket statement. Yeah. They wrote this like little post-it note, and they posted a picture of it, and it said, "Self-love is self-accountability." And I was like, "Oh, ain't that the truth?" Because I think, and like, you know, you hear this a lot too, where people be like, self-love isn't all about bubble baths. And it isn't. It's not, it's not just about doing nice things for yourself. Like, that's part of it. Like, we should all be like dating ourselves and being like, girl, what do you want to do tonight? Like, we're going to paint your nails. We're going to do everything you want to do. Like, take ourselves on dates. Like, that is so important.
Yeah.
And I think it's great for everyone to cultivate that. And I also think that if you're only focusing on that and you're only praising, and you're just like praising yourself as kind of like this, like, oh, I just praise myself because that's what I do, because that's self-love, you're missing this whole self-accountability thing that's actually like a huge part of self-love, where it's like, hey, where did I go wrong today? Mm. How can I be the person that I want to be in the world? Mm. Like, how do I want to be in the world? And, like, taking this, like, degree of personal responsibility for how you exist and how you relate to other people. And, like, part of that includes the fact that you might have to, like, expose some parts of yourself that you don't want to expose. Because self-love isn't all just, like, I'm the best, I'm awesome. It's, like, I was shitty to that person. Or I could have done a better job at this because I, you know, I let the team down.
Yeah. It's almost like, it's like, you're better than that.
Yeah. And I think self-love sometimes is just about being realistic about who you are and like being like, hey, no judgment. Like, you're just human. And it's maybe like you come from like, oh, I'm saying really positive things and I'm saying like some things that aren't so great. And I kind of meet myself in this neutral place where it's like, you're just existing. Like, you're just doing it. And like, you know, you're a wide range of emotions and there's no negative emotions. You're all the things. And that's like maybe beautiful, unconditional self-acceptance is maybe like the thing.
Ooh.
Yeah. Maybe that's maybe that's bigger for me than self-love.
Ooh, self-acceptance.
Self-acceptance.
We have it. We've said it out loud. We now have it.
There you go. I know, I'm gonna
hold
like
hold yourself accountable.
I know, this is recorded now, and so yep. I'm like, well, that's gonna stick with me for however long. So you better own it.
Wow. Going on a date with that.
That was good.
Thank you. Dang. I really like that. This self-accountability, because like you gotta do it. It's of course like it's great to it's important to surround yourself with people that will hold you accountable, but if you're not always going to have those people to hold you accountable.
Right. And now, you know, the older I get, the more I value that so much is that, you know, the people in my life that can kind of like tell me how it is and like sometimes reveal some like unpleasant things to me. I'm like, wow, I value that so much because like here we are just like unconsciously existing. And if somebody can bring that into our consciousness, if we weren't able to ourselves, like, what a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it doesn't feel like a gift at first. It feels like, oh, why do you hate me?
yeah. You're like, no, they're like, showing me love. Like, right. This is how they, like, someone truly just really loving me by telling me
how it is. And, like, part of that is also how we say it, right? Where it's like, if I need to give feedback to somebody, I don't need to, first of all. You don't need to.
Yeah.
But if I want to give feedback to somebody, it's like, how am I going to give that feedback? And there's, like, a total tact to that.
Totally.
Rather than just being like, you suck, or like, you made me mad. Like, those are not effective things.
Yeah.
But it is about how you say it. And it's also just like, yeah, like if you get it said to you in a really nice way and you can receive that well, like, that's awesome. It's so great.
It's so good. It's so good. Dang. Sarah, I love that. Wait, do you have some of the Instagram names just so people can
follow. I mean, like the one that's like blowing up these days is the holistic psychologist, and she's great. She's not a therapist. She was, and now I think she probably like considers herself more of like a coach. But she's really fantastic, and she knows all about this like polyvagal stuff. She knows all about nervous systems. She's really, really like amazingly educated on all of this. And she has these like really great little infographics. And they're just like delightful. And like, so like, I'm like, you can put like four words on an infographic and like just extract so much meaning from them. So she's great. Mm-hmm. And there's like a bunch of other ones that, you know, I can show you. We can like put an addendum onto the podcast want with Sarah's list of therapists
Sarah's
that she loves. Insta-therapist list.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow. Sarah, any remaining words? This has been absolutely frickin' wonderful.
Oh, it's been great. I like, so I wish that I extracted more information from you. I'm like, I talk too much.
Oh, that's
okay. I get excited about different topics, and then I like realize that I've talked for like an hour.
Sir, that's, I mean, I kind of run this as I am just asking questions usually, so don't even worry about it.
Okay,
like, that's
great.
What I wanted you to run with it. I wanted you to keep that excitement the whole time.
Great.
Great. Great, Sarah, holy crap, there are so many more conversations to come. Holy crap! Thank you.
Love and. Oh my gosh. Sarah, you are so knowledgeable on so many things, it's incredible. Thank you so much for being on the show, sharing your experiences, and helping others love themselves even more every day. So, thanks for listening, everyone. Check out loveamp.com for more information on self-love and the self-love coaching services that I provide. And until next time, love yourselves out there.
This was Love Amped, a podcast by Seth Pearson. Check out loveamped.com for more info on today's topic.